It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important story.
Out here in Colorado, we had a sex education bill that was passed. It was signed by the governor and put into law. I just can't believe what is happening to public education.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
We are now using policy that if you don't affirm something, that they use policy then to take away your businesses.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
Kids are just being bombarded with darkness.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
You know, we need to get back to letting our kids be kids.
Uh-oh, guess what day it is? Guess what day it is? Leslie, guess what today is?
It's hump day.
Woo-hoo!
Indeed, it is hump day. Welcome to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That's kimmunson.com, spelled M-O-N-S-O-N.com. And you can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. It is Wednesday. You have made it halfway through the week, Producer Steve. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. It's a hard job, but somebody has to do it.
You do get up pretty early in the morning to make sure that this whole thing happens. So I greatly appreciate you and the team, Zach, Patty, Keith, and Charlie, and also for each of you listeners. I appreciate you. Thank you for listening. Be sure and tell your friends about this. We jam-pack a whole bunch into this hour, and we are doing this so that you can be informed about issues, so that you can talk with your friends and your family members about these important issues, because we are at a really epic time in this battle of ideas that is raging in our country. And that's why we do this show. You can actually, if you're not an early riser or you miss it early in the morning, you can hear it from 10 to 11 p.m. And then we also have a great show recap within 24 hours with the podcast on our website as well. So be sure and tune in. A very important show planned for you today. We'll go through some headlines. Patty's pulled the bill of the day, and we'll talk about that a bit. Matthew Durkin, who is running for DA, he's a candidate for DA in Jefferson County, will call in regarding different things happening with criminal justice down at the State House. And then in studio with me is my good friend Joshua Scharf, who has written a very important piece that is in Complete Colorado. If you go to Complete Colorado and then you click on the banner at the very top, it'll take you to original content. And Joshua has written a piece about the taxing authority for Dr. Cog is a terrible idea. And I know it is a terrible idea. Very important piece that you have written, Joshua Scharf.
Good morning. Thank you very much, Kim.
It's great to have you here.
Oh, you know the thing.
So we'll talk about that in segments 3 and 4. As we look at these issues, my friends, we look at these issues as freedom versus force, force versus freedom. Socialism is on the forefront. If you look at the policies that are being espoused by the Democrat Party, this Democrat Party's policies are no longer the policies of JFK. They have lurched so far to the left where government would be controlling everything in your life. Now, socialism just means that government controls everything. Communism means government owns everything. There's not much of a difference, Producer Steve, between controlling everything and owning everything.
Knowing the little bit of world history that I do, which is probably a 10% of, you know, somebody who really, really studies history, that distinction is not one I want to see.
No, and that is why we have to stand for freedom. Ultimately, you know, we are Americans, and we are freedom, liberty-loving people. And liberty is the responsible exercise of freedom. For every freedom, there is a corresponding duty or responsibility. And that's why we look at these issues as freedom versus force, force versus freedom. And if something is a good idea, you shouldn't have to use force to implement it.
You also shouldn't have to invest or carry on a charade in terms of this college debt loan forgiveness. You know, again, I think it's vote buying. I'm cutting to the chase here, but what other thing? We see the young people out there at the Bernie rallies saying, "Oh, Bernie, he's the man," but it's not easy.
He can take it. Yes, he can.
Yeah, well, yeah, and he will. But it's not tough to see through this.
Well, it really isn't, and I think it was Jefferson that said it. Maybe somebody will text me or email me and let me know if it was or not. But a government that can give you everything, can give you decides to give you anything, they can take everything. Joshua, you probably know. Who said that? Do you know?
I think it was actually Ford. A little more recent than that. I think it was, I think it was President Ford. Yeah.
Okay. But it's true. If a government can give you something, they can take it away. And it's really, it's not virtue.
And then having sort of created the government-dependent infrastructure to give you the thing, they can take it away, and there's almost and then there's no alternative source. So you say, well, I'll go get this someplace else. Well, now guess what? You know, there's nobody wants to compete with the government.
Well, they can't.
Right.
They just can't.
So you go do something else.
But as Thatcher said, Maggie Thatcher said, the problem with socialism is ultimately you run out of other people's money. So with that, though, our inspiration for today, Steve, I have never quoted William Shakespeare. I thought it was about time to do that. And I learned some things as I was getting ready for this. This is our little history lesson.
He's probably pretty upset about that.
Well, we now have him in our repertoire here. William Shakespeare was an English poet, playwright, and actor, widely regarded as the greatest writer in the English language and the world's greatest dramatist. He is often called England's national poet and the Bard of Avon. His extant works, including collaborations, consist of some 39 plays, 154 sonnets, two long narrative poems, and a few other verses, some of uncertain authorship. His plays have been translated into every major living language and are performed more often than those of any other playwright. He lived from 1564 to 1616. He died at the age of 52. And did you know he was tall? He was 6 feet 4 inches. I did not know that.
It's a giant for those days.
Definitely. I had no idea. Did you know he's that tall?
No, not at all. That's truly a giant.
I know.
He's probably a good foot taller than most other people.
Probably.
Yeah.
So you'd see him, you know, as he walked through the village, you know, here he comes.
Oh, there he comes. Yeah, right.
So, okay, the quote for today, or the inspiration is, "It is not in the stars to hold our destiny, but in ourselves." Do you like that one, Joshua?
I love that. That's a great quote. I think there's and he used something similar. This is the fault. I think it's from Hamlet. The fault is not in our stars, but in ourselves. And the idea being, don't blame fate, don't blame mysterious forces over which you have no control. You're responsible for what you do.
Yeah. Don't be a victim. What he was saying.
Yeah, you're responsible for what you do.
Yeah.
And there's stuff you can't control,
right,
but you can always control what you do.
Exactly. So I thought that was great. One more time. That is, it is not in the stars to hold our destiny, but in ourselves. Okay, Steve, are you ready for the funny? Did you look at this?
I did, and it's good.
Okay. Joe Smith is on his deathbed, and he knows the end is near.
Oh, it sounds hilarious.
Yeah, right. His nurse, his wife, his daughter, and two sons are with him. So he says to them, "Bernie, I want you to take the Avenue Roadhouses. Sybil, take the apartments over in Rosedale. Jamie, I want you to take the offices over in the City Center Mall. Sarah, my dear wife, please take all the residential buildings on the banks of the Don Valley Ravine." The nurse is just blown away by all this. And as Joe slips away, she says, "Mrs. Smith, your husband must have been such a hardworking man to have accumulated all this property." Sarah replies, "Property? Oh, no, he had a paper route."
Having had a paper route or helping with one at a very early age, I really have appreciation for that.
Okay, let's jump in here with our bill of the day. It's House Bill 20, 1191, the Outdoor Recreation Industry Office. Joshua.
I really don't like it.
The bill creates the Outdoor Recreation Industry Office in the Office of Economic Development, also known as the Office of Picking Winners and Losers. The director of the Outdoor Recreation Industry Office is designated by and reports to the director of the Office of Economic Development. It says the Outdoor Recreation Industry Office serves as a central coordinator of outdoor recreation industry matters. So the center square says legislation that would permanently establish the State Outdoor Recreation Industry Office, OREC, as a staple of the Governor's Permanent Office of Economic Development and International Trade, ODIT, passed a key committee hurdle. House Bill 1191 was referred to the House Energy and Environment Committee to the Appropriations Committee on Thursday recently. The bill was proposed by Representatives Barbara McLaughlin, Durango, and Matt Soper of Delta, a Republican, and she's a Democrat, with the intention to support the long-term establishment of the office for the benefit of Colorado's powerhouse outdoor recreation industry.
If it's a powerhouse recreation and outdoor and recreation industry, why does it need their help?
That is the question on the table.
Sorry, I didn't mean, to give away the punchline.
No, that is truly the question on the table.
Hold on to your hat here. Wait, she gets further down here and we talk about the dollars involved.
Yeah. And I need to get to, Patty sent me this over this morning. I got to get to this.
There's a reason there's a reason people move here.
Yeah.
And it's, and the outdoors has a lot to do with it. We already know about, people already know about this. Why do they need the help?
Once again, they hide behind this so that they can create something where they can pick winners and losers. And I need to find this. I'm going to continue on here on just a second. It says, the new office has proven itself, and we have seen major accomplishments, such as the outdoor retailer shows relocating to Denver, outdoor businesses such as VF Corp moving their headquarters here, the launching of Outdoors RX, new outdoor industry degree programs creating a workforce pipeline for the industry. Okay, I'm looking at you like, I think people kind of figure out their outdoor activities. They don't need to have a...
But creating a workforce pipeline. You know, I remember when the workforce pipeline was... You know, people coming and, you know, ski bums deciding that this is where they wanted to spend their winters, and they would go and they'd, you know, latch onto the resorts, and they'd spend some time and, you know, doing that. And then they'd get in their skiing as well while they were working the, you know, we're checking people's tags as they were getting onto the lifts and so forth. Mm-hmm. That was the workforce pipeline. I'm not sure that there's a,
we need to have a
need
government
for
involved.
What yeah. exactly. Yeah. Also, it's funny. They mentioned the retailer show, but the retailer show, they just canceled. The major show, and that was a whole story that I think I was on here talking about that they a few months ago. They canceled, maybe a year ago, they canceled the one of the major shows.
Exactly.
I'm not sure that's a good selling point.
Exactly. Okay, so we've got, because Patty pulled this for us this morning, and this was, and I think you were on about this, let's see here. So, and it says that the workforce pipeline for the industry, you know, really, is that the role of government to create this workforce? And it says, Colorado's outdoor industry needs leadership and support from the state to grow this vital sector and address challenges that threaten it. A couple of things. As you mentioned, this was August 21st, 2019, from the Denver Business Journal. The outdoor retailer winter market, which generated a $42.9 million economic impact. They always come up with something like that. The thing that they don't actually let us know is that in order to create this impact, government has taken money from others. Mm-hmm. We have no idea, you know, what that economic impact would be if people were able to keep those dollars in their own pocket instead of government taking them, shaving off what they do for salaries and benefits, and then choosing who they're going to give the money to, Joshua Scharf.
Right, so there's always the administrative costs of these things. I mean, it's entirely possible that the winter market was, or that the retailers were looking for a reason to leave Utah and come to Colorado anyway. But regardless of that, the actual amount spent there was relatively low, but there were some subsidies there, and then they ended up pulling out. They ended up canceling one of the markets.
Exactly.
There was no firm deal that they were going to continue to do. And then when they ended up canceling, the governor and the legislature basically shrugged and said, you know, we're still getting most of what we wanted, and didn't even bother to get a clawback for the things that,
exactly,
you know, for the cancel. I'm not sure that I would use that. I think that's pretty poor salesmanship to bring that up in the context of throwing yet more subsidies to this industry. You know, we have a whole DU, my grad school alma mater, has a whole, the business school over, there's a whole department of hospitality. And that's what they do. They do with, you know, hotels and resorts and so forth. And that's what, it's not clear to me that the government needs to be involved in helping an industry that's already one of the major industries in the state.
Totally agreed. And your other point that you just made is that in this Office of Economic Development awarded tax dollars, our money, to bring this retailer show over to Colorado. They were supposed to be to do two shows. Mm-hmm. They reneged. They only did one, and we never got the claw back on that. One other thing before we get to Matthew Durkin, we're going to go to break and then get to Matthew Durkin, is that in Patty's note, she said, keep in mind that the Colorado Economic Development Commission awarded $27 million in job growth incentive tax credits for 800 jobs to VF Corp. And this was the enticement to get VF Corp to come to Colorado. VF Corp owns Smartwool. And Smartwool, you know, does these socks. And they had, their business was in Steamboat Springs. And after VF Corp came to Colorado, Smartwool's closed in Steamboat. Those jobs came here. And we always talk about rural Colorado.
Well, they came to Denver from Steamboat?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So Steamboat lost those jobs, and they came to the urban area. And so when all these folks say we care about rural Colorado, they used taxpayer dollars to bring a company here and shut down a business in Steamboat Springs. And so, my friends, I'm trying to connect the dots for you that when government comes in and picks winners and losers, it is not a good idea. We need to have free markets so that people can compete in the free market. We've got to go to break. I went over a little bit on time because Matthew Durkin is on the line. Before we do that, though, you know, March Madness is right around the corner. The Avs are doing great. The Nuggets are doing great. The place to watch all these games is Hooters Restaurants. They have plenty of TVs, so you won't miss any of the action. Wednesday, today is Dine and Wing Day. All the wings you can eat for $15.99. And if you don't want to cook, drop by Hooters Restaurants, pick up dinner to take home. Or you can have Hooters wings delivered right to your front door. More information, check out my website. That's kimmonson.com, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. And we will be right back with Matt Durkin, who is a candidate for DA in Jefferson County. And he'll give us an update on just kind of what's happening out there in the criminal justice arena. We'll be right back.
Award-winning realtor Karen Levine has 30 years of experience with RE/MAX Alliance. As a director with the National Association of Realtors, Karen Levine works to protect private property rights. Karen Levine believes in homeownership. Because of Karen's love of dogs, Karen volunteers with GRR, Golden Retriever Rescue of the Rockies, helping golden retrievers find their forever homes. Choose Karen Levine to buy or sell your home because she understands that it's more than just a house. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine with RE/MAX Alliance today at 303-877-7516. That's 303-877-7516.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Check out the website, kimmunson.com. That's spelled M-O-N-S-O-N.com. And within 24 hours, we always have the beautiful show recap with the podcast there. And so you can listen at any time. On the line with me is Matthew Durkin. He is running for district attorney in Jefferson County. Matt Durkin, welcome to the show this morning.
Good morning, Kim. Thanks for having me.
And what is going on? You were on last week to give us an update on things that were going on down at the Capitol regarding, you know, safety of our communities, criminal justice. Is there any new updates that we need to be aware of?
No real updates on criminal justice issues at the Capitol. The drug misdemeanor repeal bill was it was delayed. It was supposed to be in hearing in the House Judiciary Committee on last Thursday, and it was pulled from the calendar. So not a lot going on. They are continuing to talk about some bills, for instance, talking about making a felony murder, taking that from a Class 1 felony down to a Class 2 felony. And then there's always discussion that they're going to introduce the safe injection site bill. So still some bills in the works.
So tell me a little bit about this felony murder. I mean, that seems kind of serious to me. You know, Matt, what I'm so concerned about is it seems like some of these legislators want to protect criminals and yet, on the other hand, criminalize everyday law-abiding citizens. I mean, do you see anything like that?
It's certainly hard not to feel that way right now. What they're introducing with the felony murder bill or potentially going to introduce is right now it's a Class 1 felony. If you commit an intentional act, like for instance, you commit an aggravated robbery, and in the course of that aggravated robbery that someone is killed, you can be charged with felony murder, which is a class one felony because you're conducting an intentional act, and then someone dies as a result of your intentional acts. And the legislature is trying to dial that down to a class two felony. So that would be 16 to 48 years. Hypothetically, you could get as little as 16 years for killing someone.
Wow. Gosh. And then the safe injection sites, you know, people really rallied when Denver was considering that. What was it, last year or the year before? And you know, I do not think that government should be using taxpayer dollars to help enable people to destroy themselves. I do not think that's a good idea, Matt Durkin.
Absolutely not. And in fact, we've talked about it before. And keeping people in their own prisons, personal prisons of addiction, is certainly no answer to any of these problems. And what we've seen in other communities that have gone down this path is that it just creates tremendous problems, just rings of crime, rings of health issues, and rings of just public safety crisis around these centers. So they have to staff these centers with emergency medical personnel and law enforcement for, you know, blocks around the centers because of all the things that are going in and out. So it just is, it's certainly not an issue or not a solution to solve this issue. And in fact, rather than being compassionate, it's really the cruelest thing that you could do to an addict is to help them stay in their prison of addiction.
You know, I was just thinking the same thing. There is no compassion on this whatsoever to help people destroy themselves and to use other people's money to force, you know, I talk about freedom versus force, force versus freedom. And Steve always reminds me because I hope my listeners know that, yes, I believe that there is amount of taxes that we pay, you know, to make sure that we have our basic limited government things that government is supposed to do. But then for government to forcibly take money from one person and then use that money to you know, enable somebody else to destroy themselves, I find, Matt Durkin, that there's something that's very unvirtuous about that.
It's really problematic. I mean, it's hard to stomach, to be quite frank. And the problem, too, is just how much money would be taken from taxpayers to fund something like this. And we've seen this in San Francisco, and that they have poured, I think, nearly $1 billion into some of these types of programs or some of these issues for those who are addicted to drugs or suffering from homelessness. And what we have seen is an absolute failure. And so you're taking, not just taking money away from taxpayers, but you're literally throwing it away and hurting people in the process. And so there is no doubt that that crime is centered and based in drugs. Not all crime, but certainly drugs fuel crime. The Denver DA, Beth McCann herself, has said that drug fuels criminal activity. So by creating these types of programs, you're literally creating crime.
And that doesn't seem like that is the proper role of government, Matthew Durkin.
Absolutely not.
So we have just a few more minutes. What else do you want people to know this week? We're going to have you on once a week to give an update on what is happening regarding criminal justice. And the point we want to make is that for people to be able to thrive and prosper, one of the most important things is to have safe communities. And that is something that you certainly are focused on, Matthew Durkin. And so when you're trying to make criminals out of law-abiding citizens and then make criminals not really have to be responsible for their actions, we're going to start to see some real effects to that, Matt, at least from my thoughts.
Well, we already are seeing those effects. And, I mean, everyone can hopefully agree that public safety is first and foremost in our communities. We need to be safe in our homes. We need to be safe in our neighborhoods and in our overall communities. And what we've been seeing for the last 5 years since the legislature has chosen to basically rewrite the criminal laws, really minimizing penalties, legalizing or decriminalizing drugs, is we've seen a huge increase in crime in every aspect of crime, whether that's murder, other violent crime, or even motor vehicle thefts. And we've seen that across every county here in the Denver metro area and across the state. And so public safety is at risk right now. And and to see the discussion at the legislature being really kind of deaf and dumb to that fact is really terrifying, and it's really hamstringing us in the courtroom. And we just really want people to understand just the importance of public safety and how we can stop this slide right now. Right now, we are on an increase in violent crime here in Colorado when the nationwide trend is on the decrease. And so we can get our communities back.
Well, and one of the ways to do that is by who we elect. So, Matthew Durkin, thank you for stepping up and throwing your hat in the ring. Last time around, George Soros had big money in 12 different DA races across the United States. He was trying to play in Jefferson County 4 years ago, and actually Pete Weir won that election. He's term limited on that. But I imagine that probably we're going to see Soros money come in again in this particular race. And out of those 12, I think that Soros people won 10 of those. And then you look at those communities across the country, and those communities generally, it looks like, are not the safest places in the world to live right now.
Absolutely. They have been, they've really struggled. Communities like Philadelphia, excuse me, and even right now, Bernie Sanders, who won the primary here in Colorado last night, he's also been playing along with these type of Soros DAs. And in fact, he endorsed Kim Fox just last month. He endorsed Kim Fox, who's the DA in Cook County, Chicago. And we all know exactly what's going on in Cook County, Chicago, whether or not it's people getting shot every day or her type of crony prosecution when she dismissed the Jussie Smollett case. Bernie Sanders and George Soros have supported DAs like that in Chicago. And in fact, Bernie Sanders endorsed the newest Soros implant DA in San Francisco, who's refusing to prosecute crime there in San Francisco. And again, we all can see from across the country just the devastation that has been wrought in San Francisco. So we just do not want that here in our community.
We do not. And so in order for people to be able to thrive, prosper, flourish, and take care of their families, go after their hopes and dreams, their life, their liberty, and their pursuit of happiness, we need to have safe communities. Matthew Durkin, I know that you are dedicated to that. How can people help you? Just the cost of a cup of coffee, I know that would help you because it takes money, and we know there's going to be big money out there. And so how can people help you? What's your website? Where can they contribute?
Absolutely. We would love all the help we can get. We're up against Goliath, but we can do this. And we feel like there's a wave that's building in Colorado and across the country, and we're just thrilled. And so please go to durkinforda.com. That's durkinforda.com to contribute and to also volunteer. Host a fundraiser, host a meet and greet, host a coffee. I'll talk to anybody who will listen, and I want to talk to every one of our 435,000 registered voters here in Jefferson County and a couple thousand more up in Gilpin County. So we just want to reach out and discuss these issues with every one of our friends and neighbors.
Okay. Well, Matthew Durkin, thank you so much. And we're going to do this every Wednesday morning. We'll talk to you next Wednesday.
Great. Have a great day.
Thanks so much. We're going to go to Jason McBride over at Presidential Wealth Management. And Jason, I don't know if you know this, but I've got some good news for you.
Oh, you do? What is it?
Due date.
Give me a raise and I get to do the show later?
I'll get back to you on that one. Okay, Jason?
Okay.
Due date too late. This ballot initiative is trying to get onto the ballot. They needed 135,000 signatures. They made it. It's going to be on the ballot. And for those that don't know, I mean, when you tell people this, in Colorado, you can abort a baby right up to the day that it's being born. And people are incredulous. And so our friend Juliana Day went to work, and she has been working almost round the clock. And it just came out that it is going to be on the ballot. Jason McBride, is that not blessed news?
That is fabulous. And congratulations to Juliana. And, it's interesting when you say they can abort the baby right up to the day it's being born. Well, how would you know it's the day it's being born unless the mom's already into labor?
Oh, I hadn't thought of that.
I don't know where the Mendoza line is where they say it's been born or whatever, but that's great news.
It is truly, truly
so
great news.
I got off track there.
No, I just knew that you would be excited about it, and we wanted to let our listeners know that has made the ballot. That is very exciting. Now, Jason, we have to engage in this battle of ideas so that people understand exactly what is going on in Colorado. And this is historic. It's just a historic thing. We'll continue on that subject. What about the markets? I mean, it's so crazy out there right now.
Yeah, it's kind of been a one-track subject the last couple of weeks, but when things are crazy like this, not a surprise. We had the moonshot on Monday where we had the big gains. Yesterday, we gave part of it back, but not all of it. The Dow ended up down just shy of 800 after being up 1,300 the day before. As many people might have heard, the Fed did cut rates by a half a point yesterday. And I'm not sure how I feel about that. I'm kind of apathetic about it right now. I have feelings both ways. But this morning, the futures are up about 600 on the Dow. And it's funny, I don't see one, I haven't seen any mention of the coronavirus this morning. So I guess Super Tuesday, has kind of taken over the headlines for now.
Okay, a couple of things on that. So with that interest rate cut, people may want to reach out to our colleague Lauren Levy, who is a mortgage specialist, because interest rates are at a historic low. It may be a time to consider to refinance. You can go to my website, and Lauren's link is there. And of course, Presidential Wealth Management, you can go to my website, and we have our link there as well. But I wanted to read this to you this was from MSN. This was headline news. I saw this yesterday, and then I was reading it, and like nobody really is talking about this. This is what they said. Current information suggests that the most COVID-19 cases are mild, said Dr. Nancy Messonnier, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention's director of the National Center for Immunization and Respiratory Diseases. According to a report out of China, the most serious illnesses occur in 16% of the cases, she said, and older people and those with underlying health conditions are twice as likely to develop serious outcomes. I thought that was just important to say that, you know, most of these cases are mild, and you are not seeing that trumpeted on any of these headlines, Jason McBride. And as Rahm Emanuel had said, we never want to let a good crisis go to waste. And I think that this narrative on the coronavirus has, you know, really wreaked havoc in the markets right now.
Well, I think it has. And I'd mention one more thing that, you know, Trump keeps getting compared to Obama and Ebola, and, you know, where we hardly had any cases of Ebola here in the U.S., Well, let me ask you a question, Kim. Ebola broke out, like, in the Congo. How many flights come in from the Congo every day to the United States and other countries? Like,
we're manufacturing.
Zero. And,
yeah,
you know, it breaks out. If Ebola would have broken out in China the same way that this other one did, it would have been a massive problem because you have so much commerce, and it would have spread like crazy. I think the only Ebola that got into our country was people that they already knew had it, and they let them come in. And if I remember right, one of them was allowed to ride around and take a bike ride in public. No big deal.
Okay.
Except it wasn't. Except in that case, Ebola, it wasn't a big deal because the means of transmission was much more limited. I mean, you almost had to have direct contact with somebody's bodily waste in order to get her riding around on the bike and then, you know, touching a handrail. You couldn't go and then touch the handrail right after her, and it was very unlikely you were going to get the disease. But coronavirus is transmitted much more easily.
Well, and coming in from China and all the manufacturing and all, and I did just get a text message that I think that we need to certainly cover in prayer this whole due date too late. One of our listeners said it's not entirely true. They may not have enough signatures to cover errors. So we certainly need to be mindful of that, but I hope that we have the good news on that. Jason, I'm going over on everything here. Any final thoughts before we go to break as we look into the markets today?
Nope. Last final thought is now the important places to watch is to see if the market holds up from the lows on Friday. If we don't take out Friday's lows, that's important. And now we'll start watching through that for that follow-through day. Where we get a big move up, 1.2, 1.3% or more. and it has to be on heavier volume than the previous day. So that's what I'm watching for at this point, is some type of a signal.
Okay. Well, we'll talk to you tomorrow morning. I greatly appreciate it. That's Jason McBride, Presidential Wealth Management. Check out the website, airpresidential.com. We're going to go to break. Joshua Scharf is in studio. We'll talk about this really important piece that he had in Complete Colorado about Dr. Cog. Jason, thanks so much. Have a great day, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Bye-bye.
Okay, we're going to go to break. Before we do that, one other thing I wanted to mention, and we had put this out on Facebook, and that is Candy Sitabaka. As many of you know, she is a Denver City Councilwoman, and apparently there was a tweet where somebody said, for the record, if I do get the coronavirus, I'm attending every MAGA rally that I can. And then apparently Candy Sitabaka shared that from her own Twitter account, and, you know, with like thumbs up or whatever all those little emojis are. And, you know, this is supposedly the Democrats are the people that are tolerant and not hateful, and they care about people. And the most unique thing about all of this is the veil is off on what is really going on. Now, I know there are people that are calling for Candy Sitabaka's resignation, and so we're going to see what's going to happen. But I want to make the point that that is just really amazing that somebody would say something about that regarding a tragedy that they would want to try to infect other people. So we're going to go to break, though, because Joshua Scharf is in studio, and this whole Dr. Cog thing, I mean, they're trying to figure out all different kinds of ways to take our money. We'll be right back.
A reverse mortgage can be an important financial tool for individuals 62 and older. It is essential to understand the process so that all of your questions are answered. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lauren Levy, Polygon Financial Group, has the experience to answer your questions. Lauren knows that each financial transaction is personal. If you'd like to explore your options on a reverse mortgage or with rates down, explore options to remodel your home, buy a rental property, or move, call Lauren Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, MONSON.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. In studio with me is Joshua Scharf. He has written a really important piece that is in Complete Colorado. And if you want to find that, you can go to Complete Colorado and then you click on the banner ad at the top, and they have all of their original content there. And Dr. Cog, when I was on city council, I realized that Dr. Cog is not something that cares about my health. It was actually something that I thought was actually gave me high blood pressure. I think that's what it gave me.
Possibly. The more informed you are, the higher your blood pressure went.
Exactly. So explain to our listeners what Dr. Cog is.
Yeah. So Dr. Cog is sort of the cute nickname for the Denver Regional Council of Governments. It's abbreviated DRCOG. And then sort of people go to call it Dr. Cog, right? Because DRCOG is a mouthful. Mm-hmm. It sort of gives it a nice little friendly thing. But what it is it's a mostly informal group of local governments, the seven counties of the major seven Front Range counties, plus Gilpin and Clear Creek County. Have status as well, and then a bunch of municipalities within those counties as well. And so it's a council of governments. Understand that it is not directly elected by anybody, and it also these are appointed representatives. So, you know, for a long time, it kind of operated as student council for, you know, people who kind of wanted to be involved in planning stuff. They could go and they could do stuff. It doesn't really have legislative authority. It doesn't have rulemaking authority. It can come out with all sorts of plans, but unless the individual governments adopt those plans, then it doesn't have the force of law. It also does not have any taxing authority or ability to levy fees. So all of its money comes from either contributions from the local governments that are involved in it, or the federal government, and the purpose really of the federal funds is those can be distributed to various projects in the Front Range area. And the major areas that it concerns itself with, it's a planning organization, so the major areas that it concerns itself with are land use policy, housing policy, and transportation. And in particular transit. So, you know, having now been captured by the people who loves them some light rail and transit, that doesn't necessarily mean transportation. It certainly doesn't mean your car, but it does mean, you know, but it means light rail and scooters, I guess. And so those are the things that it occupies itself mm-hmm. with.
Now, a couple of things. When I was on city council, as we were looking at line items, the membership fees that are paid by the municipalities, but that's tax dollars that's taken away from us, mm-hmm. is one of the things, as you mentioned, that Dr. Cog lives off of. And then also, I think federal gas tax money comes in. They figure out where that goes or other federal mm-hmm. dollars. So bear in mind, we now call them PBIs, politicians, bureaucrats, and interested parties. Dr. Cog is a whole group of PBIs.
It's the PBI of all it's the PBIs of all PBIs. It's where you want to be if you're one of those, because you're not elected. You know, you're appointed by the city council, by the mm-hmm. mayor, I guess, and then it's approved mm-hmm. by the city council. And then if you're in one of these smaller municipalities, it's a chance for you to go and kind of hobnob with other people who are involved in regional planning. The idea that, you know, Aurora sort of wants to work with Denver. This is a very old organization, about 60 years old. The idea that Aurora and Jefferson County and Adams County want to work with Denver in order to kind of figure out, you know, where roads might want to go or how you might want to work with, I guess RTD is its own thing, but how you might want to you know, arrange housing and so forth. That's not in and of itself an offensive idea. It's sort of a reasonable idea. I mean, people don't just live in their individual cities and work there. They live and work in the region. And so the idea that you kind of want to work together for this is not entirely an unreasonable idea. The problem is that, again, you have this organization that functionally isn't really responsible to anyone except other governments. And so, you know, I kind of kid about it being student council for, you know, for mm-hmm. wannabes. But what this would do, what this bill would do, is give it taxing and fee levying authority. Understand that taxes would still need to be approved by a vote of the people. Fees, on the other hand, would not. And so it risks turning this thing from student council into something that looks like the EU.
Exactly.
Right? Now, I mean, you know, it's representatives of governments. Right. It's not representatives of individuals.
Well, and there is a specific agenda. And so a couple of things, you have my brain's going all different ways, is first of all, you mentioned, you know, in Colorado, you and I are both, you know, big proponents of making sure that Colorado's taxpayer bill of rights, Tabor, mm-hmm. is protected. You know, they've gotten around it with fees, which you have low-lighted in here, with the hospital provider fee, which I went down to the Capitol the first time I think that it was defeated. It didn't pass out it was a transportation bill that didn't pass out a committee. Then the next year they came out. I think it was still at the very last part of that legislative session.
The hospital provider bill was passed right at the end
of the
2018 legislative session.
That's what it was.
And it was this enormously long bill. It was an enormously complicated bill. But one of the things that it did was it basically took this fee that had been levied by the legislature on overnight stays, on patients that go into hospitals, and it moved it shunted it off to an enterprise, which meant then it wasn't counted under the Tabor cap and so forth.
Okay.
All right, so that was the purpose of it. The problem with that is that it basically moved this fee-levying authority from the legislature, and it's a substantial fee. It doesn't show up on your bill anywhere, but it's a substantial fee. Moved it from the legislature, which is your elected representatives, to an mm-hmm. unaccountable board that's appointed by the governor and again approved by the legislature, but it moved it off to this board. And it's a substantial, I mean, this thing was raising, when the time they moved it, was raising something like $700-800 million a year for the government. So in theory, it's supposed to fund Medicaid expansion and child healthcare expansion, but they moved it out because they didn't want it under the Tabor cap. So that's kind of a prop. That's sort of emblematic of the governmental problem here. Mm-hmm. What you're doing is you're moving taxing authority from elected representatives
right.
to this council of governments that is accountable to governments, but it's not accountable to the individuals.
It's insidious. It's actually insidious.
It's the fundamental thing over which we fought the revolution,
Exactly. Right,
this is not this is like basic American governance here. Anybody who votes for this thing, anybody who sponsors this thing, ought to be disqualified from public office on the basis of on the basis of civic illiteracy. And they simply don't understand. I mean, this is a core principle of the country that your elected representatives can tax you, but sort of unaccountable bureaucrats can't do that.
No taxation without representation. That was one of the rallying cries of the American Revolution, if I remember right.
Well, you know the thing.
Yeah, yeah. So I wanted to mention one other thing. We're going to go to break. Joshua Scharf is in studio, but this is related. And as we were coming up in the elevator this morning, we talked about it, this is complete Colorado, that the Colorado Department of Revenue is trying to figure out a way to tax digital movies, books, all those kinds of things. They talk about how we want to have affordable housing, affordable this, that. They don't actually want to do that. And it's because of Dr. Cog and this planning. Mm-hmm. You mentioned three things: land use, housing, and transportation. We've had Randall O'Toole on the line. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And
he's great, by the way.
Yeah, all these planners are making all this more expensive.
Absolutely. It's artificial scarcity of housing that people want.
Exactly. And Dr. Cog is at the epicenter on this, and now the legislature wants to give them taxing authority and let them levy fees on us. And as you mentioned, this is totally antithetical to representative government. We're going to go to break. We'll be right back. This is Kim Munson and Joshua Scharf, and his very important piece that is in Complete Colorado. The taxing authority for Dr. Cog is a terrible idea. We'll be right back.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
You want to succeed, so you need to dress for the job, event, or relationship that you seek. For more than 30 years, entrepreneur and stylist Kim Munson has been helping women look their very best. And guys, Kim can help you with made-to-measure shirts that fit great and you'll love to wear. Guys and gals, if you want to up your game, freshen your look, email kim@kimmunson.com for your initial style consult. Kim at Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I love all these great Westerns. I think that's the Prague Philharmonic that we're listening to there.
This is the Magnificent Seven.
Yeah.
Which for my money is the greatest Western ever made.
I love the soundtracks. I just love the music. Somehow the music sounds so free to me. That Western individual spirit that built Colorado, and now we have PBIs that want to take that away, particularly here at Dr. Cog.
They want to segue.
To take your money via taxes or fees. So okay. What do we need to know about this, Joshua Scharf?
Yeah, so I mean, aside from the governance issue, which is pretty bad to begin with, and probably the core reason why people should oppose this thing, the policies that they want to implement themselves are somewhat insidious themselves. We talk about affordable housing, and we talk about transportation. One of the two biggest complaints that people have as the metro area grows, are sitting in traffic and not being able to afford a house, not being able to afford to move up. So while it's still a soft boundary, meaning that it doesn't have true, and again, unless a locality adopts this for their own land use, Dr. Cog can't force this on localities. There is an urban growth boundary, and this has been done in other cities. Portland does this, for instance, and it has the effect of ramping up the cost of housing. Has the effect of making houses more expensive. Okay. People want, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, okay, so what you do, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure this out. You limit housing, mm-hmm. and then you use, through the Office of Economic Development, dollars to entice, like VF Corp, to come here. Mm-hmm. And so you bring more people in and you limit housing. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that housing is going to become more and more expensive. And then the other thing about it is, and Randall O'Toole has mentioned it, and then we had Liz on from the Colorado Association of Realtors. Rand O'Toole says that the cost of regulations can be as much as 40% of the cost of new housing here. And for sure, the Realtors Association has done a study, and it's at least 25%. Just think about it, that. If you shaved off the cost of housing by 25%, it gets pretty affordable, Joshua Scharf.
Well, I don't know that it's possible to do away with all of that. However,
how about 20%?
But you're making it a lot worse. And what most people want, most people aspire to, not everyone, but most people aspire to having a home of their own, a little bit of a yard, a little bit of green space, some separation from their neighbors. Mm-hmm. You know, not. I mean, it's okay. You know, we like our neighbors, but you know, having a little bit of space where we're not sharing a wall, it's a good thing. And most people aspire to that. If you make that harder to build, then it has a ripple effect, right? Because now, with fewer single-family homes, that drives up the cost of, again, it's artificial scarcity. It drives up the cost of single-family housing. It means that if I'm going to stay, it makes me stay in my townhouse. All right, so now what does that do? It drives up the cost of the townhouse. Mm-hmm. And then that locks people in their condos. It locks people in their apartments. If more people are moving in and the only thing you're allowing to build is condos, apartments, and so forth.
Well, those primarily are apartments because of the construction defects law.
Right. So that's another problem. But if that's what you're allowing people to build and that's what people are building, then you're cramming more and more people into smaller and smaller boxes. Right. Now, for a lot of the urban planners, this is a feature, not a bug. This is what they want. They want you and me living in a box over a light rail station, right? And what they also,
and they call that transit oriented development, TODs.
Well, the other thing too is they say, well, you know, if we get these people, if we reduce sprawl is supposed to be a bad thing. If you reduce sprawl, then we'll reduce traffic. But of course, it doesn't have that effect. Why? Because if you're limiting growth to these corridors along the highways, you're basically putting everyone on the same roads at the same time. If you allow things to spread out, then yeah, maybe I'm living in Aurora and my job is in Greenwood Village, but I don't have to be on 225. There are other roads that I can take. And so you allow the same number of people spreading out, not to be using the same roads. They're sort of stuck in this antiquated sort of New York vision, New York City 1950s, 1960s right. image of everybody living in the suburbs and commuting into the city and then commuting back out. And most of your commuting, or I don't say most, a larger and larger fraction of the commuting is cross county.
But the other thing, because that's what they say, is we want to reduce congestion. Ultimately, and I've gone down to some Dr. Cog meetings, and interestingly enough, it's been a couple of years, but I saw this when I was on city council. These councils and these commissions were no longer deliberative bodies mm-hmm. on what it was our role in what it was what we were supposed to do. They put up on the screen that we are going to come to consensus and that nobody's going to talk about not being part of that consensus outside that room. That is a very socialist to me, if you will, that we can't have a free flow of ideas.
Well, you know, if you have a representative who is appointed or even elected to an organization like that, say from Castle Rock, their job, and you know, I like George, and that's fine. I mean, I'm not picking on George, just thinking of an outside or, you know, city outside of Denver. You want him to represent your interests. And if Dr. Cog comes to some consensus that is not representative of your interests, you want your representative there to speak up. You don't want him to sort of go along with the consensus because, that's the consensus.
But most of them go along with that, which has been was something that was very frustrating for me. So, hey, we're going to get out of time here pretty quick. I want to make sure that we hit the other points that you want to hit.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention what ends up happening here. So if what ends up happening here is not just bad effects on where we live and how we live and how much time we spend in the cars. Number one, the idea that you're going to get people out of your cars is flawed to begin with. Rail will never carry enough people to reduce the traffic load. And people simply love their cars. They love the privacy. They love the flexibility.
Safety.
They love the convenience. And I just say they love the safety of this. Mm-hmm. So you're never going to get people. People will put up with a tremendous amount of traffic in order to stay in their cars rather than take a bus. It's really not going to happen. The other thing that it does is by organizing money flows, by organizing land use this way, it basically traps people in this. You know, a lot of the people who do this blame the suburbs for the decline of the cities. Now, I got news. Cities have been able to rejuvenate. that quote that you read earlier from Shakespeare about the, you know, that we should look to ourselves and not our stars. Okay, don't blame the suburbs for the fact that Denver has a problem now. Blame policies in Denver for the fact that Denver has a problem. And what it makes it more difficult to do is for people to leave. It makes it harder for people to leave Denver and go someplace better. It makes it it also ties those suburbs into subsidizing Denver. People leave, and I live in Denver. I don't have anything against Denver. I live in Denver. I like the place.
You make that choice, yeah.
But for people who want to leave, they don't have an obligation to subsidize Denver's mistakes. They're going to live someplace else. And their primary responsibility is to their own communities. And to say that they have this obligation to fund Denver's mistakes or to fund Aurora's mistakes is simply wrong. They don't.
Totally, totally agree. Joshua Scharf, it is so great to have you here. And in the last paragraph of your op-ed, I mean, you nailed it. You said, in a place where political theory and political practice intersect and hit close to home, allowing a council of governments staffed by unaccountable bureaucrats to practice social engineering on its citizens and force them to pay for it is exactly the outcome that our form of government is designed to avoid. You nailed it right there, Joshua Scharf.
I do write well, don't I?
You do write very, very well. So thank you so much for being in studio. It's always a great day when you're here.
It's always a great day to be here. Thanks so much, Kim.
Okay, and again, go to Complete Colorado. Click on the banner at the top, and you'll be able to find Joshua's piece. So our quote for the end of the day is William Shakespeare from The Merchant of Venice. He said, how far that little candle throws his beams, so shines a good deed in a weary world. Isn't that lovely? I just love it.
That's nice.
Yeah. How far that little candle throws his beams, so shines a good deed in a weary world. So today, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. This is Kim Munson signing off. God bless you. And God bless America. Rising fears through the rain and lightning.